Welcome to The Marketer's Journey, a podcast that delivers real conversations and fresh perspectives from senior marketing executives who share the journey they've taken and the buyer journey they create. And now, here's your host, Randy Frisch.
Welcome to The Marketer's Journey. Today, my guest has been on the podcast before. This is the first time I've had a two-time guest join us, and that is Latney Conan. Latney is the CMO of Sixth Sense, and a lot has changed since the last time she joined. It was over 3 years ago, just before a pandemic. Since then, we've had an economic boom, and now we're probably in the midst of a recession. So a lot has changed, and we talk about that change. Now, a lot has changed in a very positive way for her. She went from being a scrappy team, she described it last time as a motley crew of seven marketers, to now over 40 marketers. And at the same time, she's seeing market conditions go through what we called together inflation. More buyers at the table, more expectations. And we talk together about how she's managed that change, how she's kept the type of culture of hustle inside of that organization. And at the same time, how she picks her winners. Now, if you are part of a marketing organization or a sales organization, you're gonna love the formula she provides for the QBR process to make sure that everyone is weighing in to what is moving the needle. With that said, here's my chat with Latney. Latney, this is going to be fun. You are the first guest I've had twice on this podcast, and people can go back and listen to our first get together, which wasn't our first get together, but with everyone in the room. And that was in December 2019. Now, a funny stat that you threw in that podcast was that you described your marketing team as a motley crew of seven people who were scrappy, could barely get to everything, but somehow managed to do so. How big is the marketing team at Sixth Sense today?
It's a lot bigger than seven.
Don't want your CFO to hear this answer right now.
No, I know. Earmuffs, Rob, earmuffs. We're over 40 now, which is incredible.
That is amazing. That's a lot of growth over just 3 years, and not just to mention 3 years, but 3 years that have been interesting for growth for a lot of companies. I mean, we've gone through a pandemic. We're now entering, or we're in a recession, depending on who you ask. So for anyone to have their team grow, let alone grow about six times from the size, that's how have you made that happen, first of all?
So it's interesting. We double every year for the last 4.5 years. When you're actually growing that fast, hiring is the most important and challenging aspect of your job, both as a leader and as a contributor, because you're always looking out for, top people to bring on. And it was funny, 2 years ago, I had this talk with the team because we actually got way behind on hiring and it was an issue. Our pipeline actually really flattened out because we just saw we weren't keeping up with this double-double. And that was our V2 Mom plan last year, was the double-double plan. And so what I explained to folks was, I love to wake surf. And if you've ever done it, you'll get what I'm saying. If not, I'll explain it really quickly. But essentially, you're on a surfboard behind a boat and the wave is created by the boat and you don't have a rope. So in order to have any type of momentum and stay up, there's this finesse that you have to stay in the power center of the wave. And if you get behind the power center, there's things you can do. You can lean forward, you can drop your knee, you can try to pump. But if you get too far behind the wave, it's the weirdest thing. There's nothing you can do. You just sink. Mm-hmm. And so I gave this huge talk to my team and I said, guys, I'm tired of pumping. We are about to just sink. And you guys are drowning. Because what's interesting is sometimes when people are absolutely drowning, you can hand them a life preserver and you can give them a hiring plan and they still don't do it because it's work to hire the right people. And so I had this big talk and we had this whole theme about not getting behind the wave and making sure that we were, keeping pace with the demand to be able to continue to double. Then that has its own challenges, right? There's the challenges of managing that growth and getting the right people and getting them onboarded. And then you talked about a motley crew of scrappy marketers. You know, what keeps me up at night, Randy, is I don't ever want to look at our team and feel like we're not scrappy, whether it's 40 people or seven. We should always be like as scrappy as possible. And that's probably what keeps me up at night the most.
So I'm trying to decide where I go next because I own a wake surf boat. So I love that analogy.
Yeah, let's just talk about that.
Let's just talk wake surfing for the rest of this episode. People are going to be like, I thought this was a marketing talk. No, you're so right though, in terms of getting into a zone where you can, I don't want to say coast, but it feels
like
you're
coasting.
No, but it's
so relaxing when you're in, and that's what I said. I said, there's a lot of finesse required to stay, don't get me wrong. And there's a lot of skill and nuance, but when you're there, it's just magical. And that's where we want to be with our headcount, is not too much headcount, then you're going to run into the boat, but not enough, right? And so that's that kind of sweet spot where, you know, we all strive to be.
That's amazing. And just for everyone listening, running into the boat is actually quite hard. It's a ton of fun. My wife's photo of me when I call her is a picture of me nearly by like inches hitting the backside of the boat on a wake surf.
You can actually walk up. I mean, that's a pretty pro move.
That is pretty pro. That's pretty pro. That's essentially like a marketer just walking up into the CMO role, I guess. So let's get back on that.
Okay.
On that front. Another thing you talked about and you just hit on there is you never want a group that's not hustling, that isn't seen as having that mentality that they've got to go for it. And the last time we chatted back in 2019, you alluded to the difference between cause people and job people. You know, the people, as you described, who are there for a cause. And I'm curious, these 40 people working for you, within the marketing team alone, how well have you been able to really scout for those individuals? Or to what degree as a CMO do you start to trust your VPs to hire with that same thesis that you have?
Obviously, you have to trust VPs, but I also think that hiring is it's your most important job. So it should be a guided process. And what I mean by that is, have a clear idea of what your employee value prop is, okay? And be very clear across the board, right? So you don't come here for work-life balance, or at least not in the marketing department. And I'm okay to say that. Like, and it depends on where you are in your life and what you want to do, but that's not what we're offering. We're offering a very high growth experience. I can promise you, you will learn more in a year here than you would learn in maybe 5 years somewhere else. But it is going to be pure hustle. And that's the expectation. And so I think just you have to be upfront with your employee value prop. I also talk a lot about like this is it's non-traditional working on the Sixth Sense marketing team because we actually have three jobs. You have the job that you would have if you were a normal marketing ops person, right? Or even a normal BDR, you know, you have that job and those numbers, but then you have another job, which is to innovate. And innovating is hard. Sometimes it's more work to figure it out, right? And so I feel we have to be patient zero with not only our own technology, but the latest technology and data and trying it out, making it work together and like finding the new. And what works. And so, you know, I need people that want to do that experimentation. And then the last part is you have to teach. And so, you know, my head of marketing ops takes 6 customer calls a week minimum. And he's got to do his job, right? So you want to love that, right? And he loves it. He thinks it's amazing, right? But you have to be the right kind of person that wants to do a day job plus innovate plus teach. And so again, just being very clear with that's what this is about.
I have a question for you on that in terms of finding the person who either wants to be that or has been that? Is that something that you're scouting in the interview process to say, give me an example where you've taught, or give me an example where you've innovated? Or are you just simply looking for someone who you feel has that hunger to do so? Which is, can it be both?
It's hunger first. I'm always a little bit wary of the LinkedIn influencer, just because, you know, I want to really look at, I really check, like, are they truly putting out true statistical lessons learned, things that they tried, or are they just shouting on LinkedIn? So that would not be a criteria. That could be a pro or could be a con. It's not like I'm looking for that necessarily, because teaching isn't about building your own brand. It's about helping somebody else. And so that's the important thing, is do you want to teach or do you want to build a brand? And so the teaching is really, really critical to me.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more there. I think there's a fine line between people who are out there with heavy opinions versus people who have data-driven data that they can share. Well, listen, we're going to get more into some of those tactical learnings right after a short break here. Ladney, this is already a blast. We're keeping you around, even though this is essentially the second time we're doing this next segment. This is going to be great.
Want to improve the buyer journey for your customers and your prospects? Look no further than our presenting sponsor, Uberflip. Named a leader in content experience by G2 and a leader in content activation by Forrester, Uberflip will help you accelerate every buyer journey by creating bingeable experiences that will allow your prospects to consume more content faster. Companies like Trimble, Wiley, and 3M are using Uberflip to power their go-to-market strategies, and we created one just for you. Head to uberflip.com/journey to see how Uberflip can help you leverage the power of personalized content experiences.
A skill that has always been important in any organization, and definitely marketing, has been communication. But what Ladney hits on there is the importance of communication, especially as we scale. I think regardless of the size of your marketing team, whether it's 7 people like she was 3 years ago or 40 people today, today in the world that we're living, where people are connecting in a remote fashion, where teams are scaling, where conditions in the market are changing, it is really important for you as a leader to communicate. Explain what the changes mean. Explain what the opportunities are that people may not see on the surface. Take the time, whether it's Slack, as Ladney outlines, or sending a video, or doing a quick sync in the morning. Get your team together and give them your point of view. They're excited to hear from you, and it can get them to lean in even more for that next stage ahead. Ladney, there's a stat that I've always been intrigued by, and that's the data that comes from the Challenger Group. And if you follow this one like I have, it was back in 2015, they said there's 5.4 buyers influencing, and then it shot up like a year later to 6.8, and we're like, oh my God, what do I do? And then all of a sudden in 2020, I think it was over 11. But the last time I've seen that data is since 2020. And I look at what's going on in our world. It must be more difficult. What are you seeing in terms of the challenges to engage an account?
It's hard. It's hard right now. So one of the things that we do, Randy, is, so I have two things, finding the red and then winning patterns. And finding the red is all about looking at conversions, ASPs, win rates, and digging into where we're red and need to fix. But then win patterns is we take every go-to-market segment, every deal that got won, and we essentially analyze the journey. And we do this every quarter. What we're seeing, and I'm sure this is similar to others, is I'll just say recession. You guys know what I'm talking about. Economic thing. Pre that, it was 6 for us. 6 engaged contacts to win a deal. Then the next quarter, it went to 10. Now it's at 13.
13 different contacts in the same account, same opportunity.
in the same account on average. And so you look 6 to 10 to 13. That's 3/4. That's a lot harder, right? Now, that's not it. We also look at the number of activities required by stage. And just taking one stage, so 1 to 2, so for us, that's coming out of a meeting. Getting a meeting to actually be qualified pipeline was anywhere from 10 to 16 activities. It's now 25. And that's just one stage. So what I think is happening and what I like to do for the team is just say, let's just call it a tax. Let's look at the number of activities and the number of people we need to engage and sum it up as some kind of tax. And in some segments, the tax is 20%. In some segments, it's 40%. That's how much harder we're going to have to work to get a deal done.
When you say harder, obviously there's the work to get out all these campaigns, but what is that meant from a customer acquisition cost as well? Because every one of these buyers, every one of these campaigns is going to cost you another touch point. How are you building that into your model? Is it just spend more, or is it we've got to pick the right engagement points?
Yeah, it's picking. That's the rub. It's we have a tax, but we're not making any more money. Like, you know, we're trying to be very mindful of our CAC and keep it in line and keep it the same. So it's about being a lot more creative. And my message this quarter was we need to rethink the way we work. So it's not about just doing more. We have to really fundamentally rethink the way that we work to be able to cover the tax and then some. So we're doing things like we're using conversational email. So I'm trying to get my PDR ratios. Right now, it's 2-to-1 for Stratton Enterprise and 4-to-1 for commercial. So we're trying to go to 5-to-1 and 3-to-1 by using conversational email. So more touch points, more coverage, but less people. And ideally, those people can have more time to do more high value activities, you know, like calling, like meetings, like curated content, things like that, you know, versus just, you know, scheduling and things like that.
Can you just define for us what you mean by conversational email versus just the mindset of an email? Is this emails through the BDR org, through a platform you might be using, or is this, you know, how marketing
is AI? Supported? It's actually the AI writes the emails and the AI responds. So the AI can read and write, essentially. And if you look at like Jasper and some of the things going on with content, like that's what I say, we got to change the way we work. And there's a lot of cool innovation. And so this is one that we have been testing and it's been amazing. It's basically a bot. And like Ernie is one of our BDR leaders, for example. And so the bot, you would think it was him. But what happens is it all bubbles up. So he can then do 6 times the amount of coverage that he could normally do because he has like this AI assistant that's reading responses, bubbling up, you know, meetings, can schedule meetings, knows when someone is out of the office, knows when someone loops someone else in. So it's taking a lot of the administrative burden off of scheduling and getting a meeting.
It's interesting. So I'm thinking back to this tax that you referred to, this 20 to 40% tax, which, not to challenge your analogy, I almost feel like it's more like inflation, which we can all relate to even more so
that's
today,
a better
right?
Analogy. Like, yeah.
The cost
that's
of probably everything we're trying to do in life just costs more, and we're still earning the same dollars in many cases.
Yes. Okay. That's better. You're right.
So now that we can all relate in that way, because we all hate tax and I think we're learning to hate inflation in the same way. So what, other than some of the technology, how are you making decisions on priorities that are day to day? How do you decide and how do you rally your team on what they're dropping or what they're taking on is new? Because this gap, I'm thinking of 6 to 13 people. Are these 7 people more important than the original 6?
So it's interesting. I think that the sales person in me continues to run our team a little bit like a sales leader would. And so every quarter we now do QBRs. And the QBR is two parts. It's a reflect back, and you know, they give basic readout on their programs and we stack rank them. And part of the QBR is also like, what are we cutting next year that you did? Like, what did you do that was just a dud? And it's okay. Like, who cares? Let's not do it again, you know? So it's all about like ruthless cross-team prioritization. And so that's day one. And then day two is, okay, what are we going to do go forward? And the go forward is all about like specific priorities for that quarter. So for example, this quarter, you know, we're sitting on a ton of pipeline. And I'm like, not that we don't need to like create more pipeline, but I want you to favor programs that are around win rates and are around customer retention and upsell right now. So they know when they look at their programs, you know, those are the ones that we want to focus on right now. And so that, I think it's just being like, it's communication and focus and alignment, especially like as your team gets larger and it can become more complex. You have more products, you have verticals, you have geos, and yeah, those things add cost. You know, single product, one segment, like all day, right? But as you have multiple products, multiple geos, and start to verticalize, that complexity also is an inflationary item.
We can roll with that all day.
I know. That's my new
work and personal life right now.
Yeah.
I want to get a little tactical on this QBR that you're running every quarter from a couple of perspectives. One is, how many people are coming into that? Because last time we chatted 3 years ago, you alluded to targeting marketing organizations that are mid-market to enterprise. I would argue your team is almost a mid-market size marketing team at this stage in terms of 40 plus people. So we start to get into these challenges of communication. Mm-hmm. How many people are you bringing from your marketing org to this QBR? And then I'm going to have a follow-up question. Maybe you'll hit it at the same time. How do you disseminate that feedback to the rest of the group?
Also constant struggle. And, you know, because it's interesting, you want enough people to hear and be involved, but you also don't want to take a ton of people out of the field for 2 days. And part of your job, again, back to being a sales leader, is to protect the team's time. That's the only asset they really have, is their time. We do it with my directs, but it's actually director plus. So it's basically director plus involved in the QBRs. And then the expectation is obviously that they will trickle it down to their team. We're a very Slack culture. So we try to summarize and reiterate in Slack. We have a marketing all hands once a month where we try to, again, reiterate and summarize things. Is it always 100%? I don't know. I hope so. We try to over-communicate. And I think what I've found lately just on this topic of communication is, you know, when you have an inflationary environment, like it's also our job to like keep the team pumped. And so I really try to, on that all hands, all marketing, just be lots of shout outs, lots of bringing forward things that people may not know are happening and highlighting it and putting that into the context of why it's important. So it tries to be a showcase of different cross-functional things so that people understand kind of all the moving parts required.
It's fascinating. Lani, we're going to keep you around. One more short break here on The Marketer's Journey. Then I got some rapid fire questions for you. We'll be right back. Latney weighed in there on the inflation of the number of buyers weighing into the decision purchase. Now, whether you're going from 6 to 10, 10 to 13, even a single additional member at that table makes things more expensive, makes things challenging. Now, there are some channels that we can go and increase where we can get the budget, or we can justify that this buyer is more important. One channel or one destination that is quite scalable is that of content. Now, the key is curating the right content for every buyer, but we shouldn't always have to focus on creating more content. rather creating an endpoint, creating a destination, creating a place where people can go and learn about why this solution that you are selling is going to add value to them. Now, whether you got to do that for 6 people or 10 people, figure out which experiences you have to create for every endpoint of every channel. Do that at scale, and you will connect with people in a way that moves that buyer journey. So Lani, I'm going to be very open with you. I have interviewed people for head of marketing roles at Uberflip who later go on and join as a VP level reporting into a CMO being you at Sixth Sense. So you have a lot of leaders. You have a lot of probably future CMOs on your team. What do you think is the best recipe for that next CMO? What is the skill set that they need to have the most?
It's a very diverse job. For someone who wants to be a CMO, you have to learn to almost be like a consultant. You have to learn to really analyze and pick up new skills frequently. You know, I have someone who is on the team and she will be a CMO one day. And so, you know, I purposely said, I think you need a role. You need to go into product marketing. You know, she had never done it and she was nervous about it. And she was going from managing a team to being an individual contributor. But I said, if you want to be a CMO one day, you got to have this under your belt and you know our product and you know this is the time to take the training wheels off, right? And so I try to just proactively rotate people that have that need and that desire. And I think, again, the best training for me was being a consultant because you have to observe a lot, you have to listen a lot, analyze, you have to form a point of view, and then you have to be able to, like, you know, get behind that point of view and rally, quite frankly, a lot of people that do not report to you to do the things that you'd like them to do.
Those are great tips.
Yeah. I mean, your team, I think a lot of times it's easy to think of your team as like the people that report to you. That's easy. Rallying a team of people that you report to you is like easy stuff. You know, the hard part of this job is you have to go rally an entire organization that does not report to you. And then you have to go rally a market that may or may not care about what you do. So those are super skills, you know? So really thinking about that and being able to do that is, I think, the X factor that CMOs need to have.
I love that. So the nice thing about rapid fire questions is I can jump from one topic to the next so easily because that's the format here. We're going to jump over to content. We didn't talk a lot about content today, even though you and I talk about content kind of behind the scenes all the time. What content these days in this world with so many different stakeholders that you've talked about and outlined today is resonating the most?
Again, we do that win-loss thing and our win thing. And for us, the number one pieces of content are my team recording small vignettes and videos on how they use Sixth Sense. That's just what the data says. Those are the
Sixth Sense using Sixth Sense. People want to get tactical. They want to roll up their sleeves, and your ability to be that innovator, as you talked about before, definitely would play a big role. So I want to ask you another question that you and I talk about all the time, which is personalization. What is personalization today? If you had to sum it up to someone, beyond knowing their name, what does it mean to personalize something?
Oh, this is one of my like things I talk about all the time. It's about forget the word personalization. Remember the word relevance. There's 4 factors of relevance. Who's the account? So what is it about this geo vertical size situation that they're in that makes you able to provide unique value? Their persona. So what is their job and what is their from to that you support? Why are you going to make their job easier or better, whatever? Their behavior. So what keywords are they researching? What are they looking at on your website? And then the 4th factor is timing. Are they early stage in their journey, mid or late? If you know those 4 things, I think you can always deliver a great experience or provide relevance and value.
I absolutely love that word, relevance. I think that's what we all expect in our day-to-day. Mm-hmm. So keeping this entire podcast relevant, I want to come back to finding balance. And all of us need to find that in one way or another. You have no doubt been busy, as you said, being at Sixth Sense as a company where you'll learn more in a year on the job, but it still seems like you find time to learn how to wake surf. So how do you balance these two things for yourself? And then how do you set that as an example?
I don't do everything, right? I'm very choosy about what I pick to do. So I would say my boys are in high school and I'm keenly aware that time is short. So I really prioritize things with our, we call it our four pack. So, you know, anything that involves the four of us doing something, I'm in, hence wake surfing. They love to ski. You know, they love movies that I don't think are interesting at all, but that's okay. Let's go. You know, so it's really for me, you know, I don't need a ton of friends or parties or this or that in my personal life. I just, right now, that's, it's all about like spending time with them. And then that'll change. Like, right, that they'll move on and be in, and then that's kind of the great thing about life. It's just all about what stage are you in and what's most important, like given that stage.
I love that. I think the key that you put there is figure out what is important in your personal life and make time for it and realize the window you have to do that, as you said. Ladney, this has been so much fun. We've learned so much yet again, a second time around, about your personal journey, the buyer journey, and more than anything, I think how to be a great CMO, which you continue to do. Thanks so much for joining us. If you've tuned into this episode for the first time, check out all the other amazing CMOs I've gotten to speak to. There's been over 130 since Ladney and I last spoke. So you'll find a good one in there. Tune in. And until next time, thanks for joining The Marketer's Journey.
You've been listening to the Marketer's Journey podcast. Big thanks to our sponsors at Uberflip, who help you fuel demand generation with content for an accelerated buyer journey. To ensure you never miss an episode, subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify at uberflip.com/podcast or anywhere you listen to podcasts.